Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my. Do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team to strike on distance. And it rattles in. Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento kid.
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
Hello, Sacramento, and welcome to the Rise of the Republic podcast. I'm your host, Blake Marquez, and man, it is good to be back. How are you feeling, Rich?
I'm feeling, you know, I'm okay. I can understand that a lot of fans are going to be really, really upset. It's more than understandable. This was maybe the craziest finish of the year, a crazy end to a crazy year. Man, yeah, we're gonna break it on down. But yeah, let me first ask you how you're doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I'm doing okay. For those who follow us on Twitter and have been keeping up with the podcast, my voice will be a surprise to hear back. I took a few episodes off a couple weeks ago. I'll just kind of rip the Band-Aid off here. Bad news coming in. 3, 2, 1. A few weeks ago, my mother did end up passing away relatively suddenly, which kind of just, I'm sure everyone out there will understand, put the brakes on any soccer watching and podcast preparing I was doing in my life. Had to make a couple trips out of town and take care of some business on that end. But I'm back now and ready to wrap the season up, I guess.
Yeah, man. It seems weird for me to say it now on mic. So I know we've spoken a number of times since you got that news. But again, I'm so sorry for what you've gone through. So sorry for your loss. I can't imagine what that's been like. And I'll say, you know, we have a very small listenership, small but strong, but I don't think anyone is sitting here like, you know, where the heck's our podcast? I'm sure if the listeners will let me speak on their behalf, I'm sure everyone is just glad that you've taken the time and that you're back with us.
Yeah, I really do appreciate that. I got a lot of people reaching out to me over the internet, over Twitter. You made a small kind of update on what was going on with a little bit less detail than I shared today. And I received so much support. And in all honesty, Rich, I'm going to transition it into soccer here after this, but you have been super helpful through this process, allowing me to take the time I needed to take and do what I need to do and just making me feel complete comfort throughout that entire process. So big thanks to you, Rich. Big thanks to everyone that sent me their love and their prayers, and to the listeners for sticking around. You know, I couldn't have done it without you guys. I really appreciate it. But on a lighter note, we'll take a deep breath and exhale, and we'll go into this epic letdown of a game that it was. A 1-0 loss in extra time to Phoenix Rising. Horrendous, horrendous ending. But I want to get your thoughts on it before I go into it a little bit.
Yeah, man. Sometimes it's tough to even know what to say. This game, obviously, you know, I'm not breaking this news to anyone. If you're listening to this, you certainly watched the game or at the very least saw the highlights, and you know that Republic FC lost in extra time on a handball, a late handball. I mean, what I would call a blatant handball, at least like in terms of the replay. It's undisputable, undeniable that this was punched in by reigning MVP from last season and captain of Phoenix Rising, Solomon Asante. It was punched into the back of the net in the 114th minute. But I almost don't want to say undeniable or irrefutable, just because when I've watched it a bunch of times in real time, and I can't see it in real time. So let's just start there. Like, you know, could you tell this was a handball right away?
You know, it all kind of went down so fast. Not the speed of the the speed of the moment there did go by fast, but I had a lot going on that day, and kind of like saw the replays. I guess what I'm getting at is I don't know if it looked funny to me when I first saw it, you know, live in full speed. But it was very obvious after you watch a replay or two, super blatant. I think it looked kind of funny. And off my first look, it was like, that doesn't look right. I seemed like if it was his head, it seemed like his head got down in an awkward situation really fast. So yeah, I was a little iffy about it, but, you watch a replay or two, especially once you start getting people that put it like frame by frame in those GIFs, it's really obvious that that's a handball.
Yeah, you make a really good point as far as trying to understand like where the angle is, like how did he fire such a rocket into the net when his head was like kind of moving down? And it's almost like if you're trying to in the moment think, wow, he headed that into net, it's like how, like what part of his head did he use, like the very like tip of his forehead, like I don't even know like what part of his body, like I at first I was like, wow, did he use like his chest? But how could you couldn't get that much power off your chest in that way.
That was off to me, is like it looked like a redirect, which I'll get into. I think that's what he was going for originally, but it had so much power behind it where it's like the shape of his body and his hips, there's no way he could generate that much power. So it just looked off when I saw it first, judging from, you know, just physics of where you expect things to go from body shape and speed and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, how much are we going to blame this on the refs? I mean, like I understand it was their fault. I mean, you're a referee. It's your job to get this call right. It's your job to make the call here. But, you know, just everything considered in the context, I mean, how upset are you at the referees? You know, and just understanding that these referees probably aren't paid super well and probably aren't the best referees in the world. I hate to say that, but, you know, I mean, it's probably I should have done more research on this, but I find it hard to believe that the USL has like the best, most experienced, highest paid referees in the game. So I don't know. I know I'm making a bunch of excuses for them already, but I just feel like it's hard for me to put this all on these human beings who are, at the end of the day, they're fallible. They make mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not blaming all this on the ref at all. It sucks. I wish he would have made the call. I think he probably should have made the call. I don't know what goes into the day-to-day, not the day-to-day, but like what a ref is trained to be, like where they're trained to be with knowing that they're not going to have VAR to rely on if a mistake is made. A lot of it goes to positioning of the referee, and I don't know if he was supposed to be at a better angle for this or not. If I, you know, had gone through a referee training, I'd feel a little more confident in saying like, oh, well, he should have known to be standing here in that scenario, but I don't know if that's the case. I'm going to leave it up on this one, up to human error. He called a relatively good game up until there. And I know you're going to have a lot to say on this note the Republic aren't to blame for the fact of being in that position in the first place. So
yeah,
I mean, there's more things that we can point the finger at than just the referee.
So I went back and listened to our last couple episodes together, the last two breakdowns we did, which I believe were Reno and Orange County. Mm-hmm. And those were a couple games with some very controversial calls. That was just one thing that stuck out to me. And just I went back to kind of renew, kind of get back on in the, you know, try to get a jump start of our chemistry here, recording mm-hmm. together. And I was just stunned. I'm like, I knew we were going to talk about ref stuff tonight. And I was like, wow, we talked about refs like for a lot of both of those episodes.
That was one of those is the Roro red card, huh?
The Roro red. And yeah. Then the second game, the most recent game we did, the Reno 3-3 Reno game had handballs missed on both sides.
Oh, yeah.
The McCrary handball and the one that should have gone in our favor in their box as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you make a great point about this game. Maybe it was called better than most games this year. Actually, at least up until that point.
I really think so. Really think it was an above average game as far as refereeing goes, for sure.
So maybe we need to expect the team and the coach to build in the potential for error here? Like just saying, like, you've gone all season long with some weird games. There was one that in the last 4 weeks – that was like really a nightmare. I'll also just mention that you can check our Twitter for when I was kind of really getting on this one referee recently. Not going to name them or anything or, you know, even call out the game. But I think if you watch the game, you know, the situation there's been pretty consistently questionable refereeing this season. I just feel like you maybe need to consider that as a possibility and maybe build it into your game plan a little bit. That's all I'm going to say just to start off here.
I mean, I'm going to say something. I hope you pick it up when I put it down. But like I said a little bit ago, like I don't think the Republic should have been in this position. We're 0-0 in extra time fighting what seems to be a losing battle. I mean, to go and blame that on some dude who's not even a part of either team, it's a little tough to me. I mean, we should have had a goal in the net by now. I mean, plenty of chances were missed, and I think some bad decisions were made on and off the field. And I mean, to turn around and just blame this on the ref is way too harsh, I think. To me, excuse making.
Yeah. Do you want to get right into – do you want to talk about lineups and kind of talk about the main portion of this game, or do you want to have a longer discussion on like the end result right now?
I'm good for now. We can go ahead and talk about the lineup a little bit.
All right. We'll get back into this at the end of the episode as we kind of wrap the game up. But, yeah, let's talk about the first 113 minutes for a second here. I'm going to go with lineups right now to start. For Sac Republic, it was Rafa Diaz in goal, McCrary at right back, Hilliard Arce and Declan Keenan in the middle, your central defenders. Shannon Gomez on the left due to what I would imagine is specifically due to an injury to Juan Barahona throughout the week. He seemed locked in there going into this week, but that kind of, you know, those things happen. In the midfield, you had Andrew Wheeler-Aminu, Jaime Villarreal, and Rodrigo Lopez playing the 10, kind of something we've talked about before. Derek Formella on the left wing. William Bijev on the right wing, and Carlton Belmar as your number 9 striker. Let's just start here. Impressions of this starting lineup?
I was bummed to find out that Barahona was out, and I was obviously bummed. Everyone will know that this is the podcast, that I was bummed to see Sam Warner out. I was surprised to see no Drew Skundrich. I thought that was a odd move. I don't know what the thought was there. But everything else seems pretty solid to me. I would have liked to see Ash instead of Gomez, but what was the was there anything going on with him, or was he on the bench?
So Ash Apollon was not in among the subs. He was not in among the subs. He was not injured, to my knowledge, not on the injury report. I think he just has fallen out of favor just a little bit. The return of Barahona, I think, pushed him out of that starting lineup. And Gomez as well, to a degree, though he wasn't as locked in as Barahona.
Yeah.
But I get it. I think from the kind of in the same vein where in the last episode, myself and the 916 guys, we talked about how Sargis is inexperienced and he probably shouldn't start this game. I think, you know, the same logic can apply to Ash. He is a little bit older, of course, but he, you know, he walked onto this team on tryout day. So I kind of get it. You know, Gomez has been here for a minute. I get that inclusion. I also get the inclusion to a degree of Matt Mahoney on the subs bench. He can play fullback, he can play center back. He did eventually come in, and he was the first sub, replaced Shannon Gomez in the 56th minute. That, I believe, was due to injury, however.
Yeah, I that makes sense. I was really stoked off of the center back pairing. I didn't think there was any way you could go with McCurry and Sargis in the Mahoney in the middle with Sargis, which is a lineup I liked, a pairing I liked more in the middle of the season. But with this being such a crucial game, I think the experience and the defensive mindedness of Kanan with Hilliard Arce, it worked for 113 minutes, you know.
Yeah, I thought they played a really good first 90 to 115 minutes. They played a good 120 minutes. That center back pairing, I like that you pointed out how Mahoney and Sargis can play together and be a good pairing. It's just not the matchup for that pairing. And I will point out, like in the last episode, myself and Scott and Zach from 916 Republic kind of called this one, and I think we actually kind of called the entire lineup. We both felt like the 4-0 win against Portland from last weekend was a dress rehearsal, and it turned out to be the case. This was almost the exact same lineup. The only differences were the injuries. And to get to your point about Skundrich, he also has been dealing with an injury of sorts. It's funny. Coach Briggs referred to it as he's having trouble with his butt cheek. Is the exact quote there.
The old butt cheek spring.
Yeah, so anything else on this starting lineup? So I know you've been gone for a little bit, so maybe with that more the view of someone who is coming back to this, were there any surprises to you where if you think about like 4 weeks ago, wow, I didn't think that these guys would be so involved in the playoffs?
I mean, no real big surprises. Wheeler Aminu, again, that's just another guy that I thought Skundrich would have came in for. But other than that, no, nothing that we haven't spoke about. I figured we were going to see the front line that we saw, you know, those front three, if Warner wasn't going to start. You know who's going to be in that front line.
Yeah, and we'll get to Warner in a little bit because I think his absence was actually a huge deal in this game. But, yeah, I think the main thing we have to get to about the first half was that this was a really good first half. This team played a really good first half. I think a borderline perfect first half with the one exception of the missed chance to score there. As far as the counterattacking type of football that Briggs is clearly going for in this match, I mean, they shut down the best attacking team in the league, and they got the best chance, probably borderline. You know, you can argue with that set piece chance from Asante early as well, What did you think about the couple of chances here? There was almost no chances. There was the set pieces for Phoenix, and then that one big chance for Sacramento. But overall, this first half, what were your thoughts?
I definitely thought we were the better looking team. We looked good going forward. We looked good out of possession, organized. Sacramento always finds a way to get a little unorganized, but for the most part, we were sticking together, closing up those channels, doing a really good job of grabbing the ball in the midfield, or a little further back if they could get past it. But I thought we were winning the midfield battle, getting forward, creating somewhat opportunities that would fizzle out as we tried to get into the final third. The only time I would get nervous is off of set pieces in front of the box. And we saw two really dangerous opportunities for Phoenix Rising that were almost goals. But even, outside of that, I was not concerned. I thought we looked very good defensively, showed our ability to get the ball back, and looked well enough on the counter. So, I thought it was our game going into halftime.
I was really impressed by those set pieces. Do you think that Sacramento could be as dangerous as Phoenix was on set pieces?
If we get guys that can do that, I don't, the talent's not there right now. I don't know. This, not everyone might agree with me, but that's like MLS level set piece taking. As far as like the shot ability, that's not tactic. That's not anything except skill and playing ability to me, So
yeah, I completely agree.
If we get the guys that can take shots like that, then hell yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was just the moment where I was like, oh, okay, we're playing Phoenix. Asante's going to bang that free kick. Like, it was almost off the corner, but I think it was off the crossbar. Holy hell.
So I impressed my friend really well. He's like, he doesn't watch soccer at all, this particular friend of mine. And I had the game on, and when that first free kick went, right before he was when he was lining it up before he took it, I told my buddy, I was like, this is going to go off the post. And it did. Like, I mean, I was making an educated guess, but I felt really cool doing that.
Yeah. They have their quality. This is just, it felt like we were playing a team from a different league, just based on what we've seen from Reno and Portland. And I know Reno's really good, but even the set pieces, like Reno and Portland and Tacoma, they're not on this level. We are certainly not on this level as far as the technical ability there. I was just, I was really nervous. And there was a second longer set piece a set piece that was taken from further out that was also pretty damn dangerous.
Gave that one, right? Or did it just go out?
That was really hard for me to see. We'll get into camera angles again, I think, at the end when we talk about the penalty or the handball again. But sometimes it's hard to tell. I think it just went out, but I don't remember. I don't remember if they got a corner out of it. Rafa could have saved it. It was very, very close, and it was near that corner again. This time the right corner. Yeah, man. This feels like, I was like, okay, we're playing the best offensive team in the sport and in the league, and here's why. So I was nervous early on, but ultimately the best chance probably came for Sacramento. It was generated by, I thought, in big part by Andrew Wheeler-Amanu, who received a simple pass, but it was in the counter, and he, instead of stopping it at his feet, which he kind of has a tendency to do, and I've heard Briggs yelling at him, turn Andrew Wheeler-Amanu, he'll say the full name. And instead of stopping the ball at his feet, he turned his body, let the ball continue in its path, and he pushed forward. He put it in space to Bijev, who crossed it into Belmar with a nifty little flick. Belmar kind of sent it on, didn't redirect it too much, but just he knew he didn't have the space to shoot, and he knew there was guys trailing him. He just kind of flicked it back behind him, And Formella had a real legitimate chance to score and make this 1-0.
Yeah, that was a big letdown, because I really do think – I think we score any moment in this game, it's – I think it becomes really hard for Phoenix to score against us, because we did it. Now we can actually just defend. I don't know if that was the plan, but that seemed to me what it was going to be. Let's go get one, and now let's defend and maybe score two, or maybe they'll equalize and we can go score another. But I felt like that go-ahead goal pushes us into where, okay, now we can play our tactic even more. That being said, I think those dummy balls are, like, particularly hard to judge on how to take your run at them. What, you know, how many steps are we taking? What foot are we going to take it with? I think at that level, it's a little more, it's a little easy, a little more intuitive, but I have a feeling that might've been just a little bit of a step off, and you know, the ball goes what, over the bar? I'm thinking the other chance.
I believe this one just went right at the keeper directly. Okay, yeah. Into his kind of chest area. And of course,
I was thinking of the later chance.
Yes. Yes. That one went kind of like high and wide. Yeah, I mean, Formella got two real chances in this game. That one was in extra time, the one you're referring to. This was the best chance to score for either team in the 90 minutes, in my opinion.
Out for both teams in regular time, you think this is the best chance?
Yeah, I do.
I like that. I can get on board with that. As far as like regular play goes and stuff, because I thought those set pieces might be contenders, but I feel you on what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it just felt like at the end of the day, Formella is your top goal scorer. He's got a pretty good, clean-looking goal. I know that the pass was hard to anticipate, the little flick from Belmar. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like Formella should have made that shot. I don't want to say he should have made it, but I would bet that he feels like he should have made it, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally. I agree. I was thinking as you were saying that is like, there's definitely players on the team where it's like they sky a ball or they misplace a ball. You're like, okay, well, that's what they're doing this season. That's normal. Formella usually will throw those ones in, don't you think? I mean, that's kind of out of character for him. This team has definitely had a clinicality issue, but he's a little more clinical than that usually, I think.
Yeah, like I said, he's got as many, you know, twice as many goals as the next guy on the team. I think he probably is the only guy that has consistently not just either completely skied every shot or sent them directly into the chest and the hands of the keeper. You know, that's kind of what has happened with Cam, where he just puts the most simple, straightforward shot directly into the keeper. And it's kind of happened with Belmar a lot too. It seems like everyone on this team is, you're either missing the net entirely or you're hitting it straight into the keeper's hands. And it's, if anyone was going to actually put it into the right spot, your best bet would have been Formella. And I'll say this, when he didn't score that goal, considering how few and far chances were for either team, I did feel like, oh, this is a really bad sign.
Yeah, because the chances were so few and far between, like you say. Like, yeah, I can feel that for sure.
And just because he's so streaky, I think, you know, he's only scored in 5 games. He has 8 goals in 5 games. 3 of those games, he had braces. When he's hot, he's super duper hot. You know, if he scores, he's really liable to score again. And when he's missing, he's really liable to keep missing, in my opinion. I went back and looked at it. You know, he's got two braces against Tacoma. I think it was another brace against Portland. And then he had that one goal that was not really his goal. We talked about it, kind of deflect. It was a Villarreal shot that was credited to him, kind of deflected off of him.
Yeah.
So my point is, like, he scores in bunches. When he's hot, he's hot. And when he's not, he's not. And I just, in the pit of my throat, I'm like, oh no, it's just not that night for Formella. It's not his night. And I think that kind of did wind up being true to some degree throughout the rest of the game.
Definitely. Yeah. You need someone from this attack to show up, and you hope it's going to be Formella because he's the one that's been scoring. And when he's not scoring, you're like, dang, I don't know many other dudes that are going to rise to this occasion in this moment. Do we want to get into the second half? Are there any other big moments that you want to talk about?
You know, the only really notable stuff to me outside of that chance and the strong start were some fouls. I think Formella actually had like a pretty harsh foul that I know Phoenix wanted a red card for, but didn't warrant a red, definitely warranted a yellow. Aside from that, a really vicious elbow to Jaime Villarreal's eye. That was pretty sick. Like
the bruiser.
We posted the black eye on Twitter almost immediately. That was pretty nasty. And then, yeah, I mean, there was a shove in the box that I think, I don't know, some referees this season could have called a penalty for Phoenix. But, yeah, what did you think about the physical play and all these kind of fouls that maybe wouldn't be that spectacular or that worth talking about in a normal game, but with so little going on? Any thoughts?
I like physical play, man. There's dirty play and there's physical play. And it rode that line. It jumped back and forth across the line a few different times, but I like watching games that you see people get mad. You see people really, really competing on like an emotional level as well, taking to that next step, beating someone off the ball. I love all that stuff. So, as long as calls were going in our favor or being fair, then fair enough.
All right, so second half, I just think it started falling apart. I think that the team started getting tired. Phoenix started really dominating possession. You know, they ended the game with a 58% possession total there. It just really went badly. I don't know what to really say other than Phoenix started to become Phoenix a little bit more. They're leading the league in goals. They take insane numbers of shots. I should double check this, but I'm pretty sure they're leading the league in shots as well. They're just a very, very offensive oriented team. And as the minutes wound down in regular time, it started to feel like they were just going to start pummeling Sacramento, and the number of opportunities and chances and shots they had was just really starting to become daunting.
Yeah, it started to get that feel of, oh, okay, maybe they're going to figure out the defense. And the longer it goes on, the more times they have chances to try to unlock it in different ways, or once they find a hole, explore that a little more. Eventually it rang true. The longer it went, and we're going to have to get into it, man. We've been waiting to have this conversation. The longer it went without a sub, the more and more like dreary it got. And yeah, we saw subs, but I mean like more like staple subs, like someone that's going to go and make a difference in the attacking side, which was just really bumming me out. I thought Skundrich was a good call coming on when he did.
Talk about that Skundrich sub. Because let's get into that right now. Because we mentioned the – sorry to cut you off. But I just – I wanted to bring this up. So we mentioned the Mahoney sub on for Gomez due to injury. But then, yeah, I wanted to get this one next. Skundrich came on for Roro at the 74th minute. Well, yeah, let's get into this. I know we've talked about it off mic.
It's not a terrible, like, decision for me. Maybe could have been sooner. I'm impartial on that. Good 15-minute window in between, 65 and 75. It's fine with me. I thought it was a good idea because he can be that extra guy that's going to go get in the box and have some real energy when he gets in there. But he's also, he is a number six, so he's going to add a stronger defensive layer. And he's just he's the captain of the team on most nights, and I thought that was a good call. Like, I was excited for that. I was excited for more, because as that happened, I was pretty sure we were going to go to extra time, because it did around this time they still looked like they weren't figuring out how to unlock our defense, and I thought this was a step in the right direction. Next one's got to be a striker. And, you know, it just never came. What did you think of Drew overall?
I can understand where you're coming from if this move is followed up by a sub for a striker on as well. But I think in general, to bring off your 10 and to put on a 6 when you're pretty much pinned down in deep, deep defensive position already, I think is a huge mistake. I think it's a huge mistake. You took off your most creative passer, your only truly capable 10, and you brought on, you could argue that Skundrich is a true 8. You'd argue he's a true central midfielder that can give you as much on offense as he does on defense. But I think it's a slight, he leans slightly defensive. So does Villarreal, and so does Wheeler Aminu. Now you've got your four defenders and your three central midfield defenders, and now you've got 7 defensive players on the pitch plus a goalkeeper. I think that is not a great move when you clearly need to score a goal at some point.
Yeah, I think the way you put it of like it's a good move if you follow it up with a striker. We're pretty much on the same page there. I think the move of putting Skundrich in was a good one. The absence of substitutions after that were where it started getting really bad, and I think has a bigger consequence than a refereeing lapse, in all honesty.
That's a great point. I think that's where we both want to get to eventually. So we'll move it along here and try to get to that point as soon as possible. But yeah, I mean, I thought for sure another sub would happen before the 90-minute mark. It didn't. This game went to overtime. I think it's a little bit lucky that it got to overtime, considering how dominant Phoenix was in the second half. And then no subs were made at the start of extra time, and I was flabbergasted.
Yeah, I was mad, dude. Like, I was really upset. I did it. There's no words. There's no words on why you would use 2 subs in the regular time, and then you're going to extra time and still decide not to sub. It's crazy. You have at that
Billy
point
and Bijev had to come out.
Subs,
right?
At that point,
Bijev had to come out, right?
Yeah, I mean, he looked like he had a couple of moments there in the opening of the extra time. He had a moment or two, but I mean, he just came off like a 5-minute break, so I'll just chalk it up to that. But yeah, he was exhausted going into minute 80.
Yeah, he was completely gassed at minute 80. You're right. And he just stayed in the game. I believe he's 29 years old. You know, I mean, that's a part of it. Belmar is 27 years old. I think he's, he started to slow down an extra time. He's a really fit guy. Formella's a really fit guy. He's 24 years old. He even started to look gassed, completely gassed by, minute 105. But impossible to me that no attacking subs were made. Like, it was blowing my mind. And I know Twitter, we've got a good group of people on Twitter that we follow and that follow us, and we all tweet back and forth. Everyone on Twitter was losing their minds that no attacking player was being subbed on.
I'm going to ask you a question. I never ran this by you, but like, do you think this was like the worst move that Briggs has made all season?
Yeah, absolutely I do.
Yeah.
I think he's been a fantastic coach all year. I think that he's been smart. I think he's been strategic. I think he's been diplomatic. I think he's done a great job getting the kids involved. I think he's done a great job getting the loanees involved. He's not
real quick, yeah. real quick. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but I have to make this analogy real quick. He's been rotating the roster all season long, and he doesn't rotate it in one of the most important moments of the season.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off.
I'm no, so sorry. You're so right. Like, he has been pretty bold and pretty aggressive with the changes that he makes. And it felt like to him, I'm obviously speculating, but maybe it felt like this is the amount of time that I have to make my tweaks and make my changes and figure it out. Because when I get to this playoff game, I need to know my plan. I need to stick with it. But to me, ultimately, I really hate to say it because I think that Briggs is a good coach, a very good regular season coach. And I think that what happened here is that he overcommitted to his plan. I'll point out that Scott over at 916 Republic on our crossover episode, he said whichever team has the better plan B will win this game. If Republic had a plan B, we never saw it because Coach Briggs was doubling down, tripling down on his plan A, which is sit back, absorb pressure, and counterattack. But you cannot successfully counterattack 110 minutes into the game when your three attacking players are completely out of gas. We saw it happen. We saw all these counters, these opportunities for counters happen, and guys were done. They're done. Their hands are on their knees. They can't even sprint into open space. How are they going to beat a defensive back line that's, you know, not nearly as exhausted as they are?
I saw players like whiffing balls into each other from midfield, like arcing balls into the box when the player's surrounded by like four people. And it's like, even if he were to control that ball, like, he's not going to turn and do anything with it. He's by himself because we have everyone committed back. It was horrendous. It was horrendous. Like, all we had at this point was luck on our side that something crazy happened. And, you know, I thought we had it for a moment with that Fermela chance. And when that came and went, I think that's when the game did as well.
Yeah, we should have mentioned this as well. There was that Fermela chance in the first half of extra time.
Mm-hmm.
I believe right about the 100th minute. Not exactly sure on that exact moment, but it was the best chance in extra time for Sac Republic. Another ball came off of Belmar to Fermela. Fermela skied this one. I think a little bit more difficult to put that one in the net. I think it was off the volley.
Much harder, yeah.
Yeah, came off Belmar's head. But still, like, a decent chance, right? Like, still, like, one where Fermela probably still – he thinks maybe I should have scored twice. I know if he scored the first one, he wouldn't have had to score the second one. But I think Fermela is walking away from this like, I should have scored in this game.
Yeah, I mean, he had two of the best chances of the game. If we're making a list of three or four, I mean, yeah, he should have put one of these away. I mean, I'm not demeaning his game overall or anything, but like momentarily, yeah, that was – those are your two moments to put your name on the score sheet and take your team to the next round. And it just never came. That's just a lot of these chances in this game overall. A lot of there's a couple people that had chances in this game on both teams, and it just didn't really work out for us, unfortunately.
I mentioned that Sam Werner was going to be important to this conversation at some point. This is where he's important. If Sam Werner is not injured, if he's with the team, if he travels with the team, and he's available on the subs bench, does Mark Briggs sub him in?
I mean, who knows? He had two other choices that aren't ideal. They aren't Sam Warner's, but I think everyone else is 10 times madder than they are now about there being less subs if that doesn't – or about there not being subs if that doesn't happen. But, yeah, for BJEV for Warner, it's a real no-brainer at this moment.
it's a no-brainer. I think he absolutely makes that sub because we've seen him. I mean, Sam's played a lot. Sam's played like 14 games, something like that. He started a ton of games. I think, frankly, he might even get the start over Bijev, and then Bijev is the sub. Either way, I do want to give Briggs that you know, that out of saying that his best winger sub slash his only winger sub wasn't available. And I do think that he would have made that sub unquestionably, probably in the 80th minute and certainly in the 90th or 115th, the breaks, or 105th, the breaks there. I mean, I certainly think that Werner would have made an appearance.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been the way to go.
But now, what do you do without Werner? What is the sub? You're asking for a sub. I'm asking for a sub. All of Sac Republic FC Twitter was asking for a sub. What is the sub?
Add a 9 and a 10 and stick with the same formation, or
– specifically, like, who are you bringing off? Who are you bringing on? Who should have – what was the move Briggs should have made?
Man. I don't even know. I got some other points I want to get into that might shed some light on this. So if you want to say your last piece on, you know, these subs, we'll get into something after the handball as far as when the subs did come, and I'll be able to shed some light that way.
Okay. I think the subs are fairly obvious, personally.
Uh-huh.
I think that Belmar, you take Bijev off because Bijev is insanely gassed. I know you want him for penalty kicks. That's what you're playing for. I get it. He can't be on the field. He's too gassed. He's washed. It's over. Look at him. He is exhausted. Get him off the pitch. You know who you move to the wing because you don't have any wingers on the bench? You move Belmar to the wing, who has played there for you early in the season. I know he wasn't that effective early in the season, but he can play there. You move him out there. You bring on not Cameron Iwasa, but Frankie Lopez. Either way, honestly, is fine. Bring on anyone with fresh legs in the attack. But I would go Frankie because he's got a little more gas, a little more fight, a little more energy, a little bit younger. I would go Frankie Lopez there for the gas, for the energy. But that's my move. You pull Bijev out, slide Belmar over, put in a new striker. My choice would be Frankie Lopez. Totally fine if it's Cam, but that's the move you absolutely have to make.
Yeah, I mean, I have no arguments there. That makes sense. You're moving to a kind of a three-man in the center, like wingers. So it's a five-man midfield still with your lone striker up there. Makes sense. Fresh legs as a striker in these moments can win you games. So, yeah, I have no issue with that.
And I know that Bijev is a good penalty taker, but you're not even losing that much if you're bringing on a striker like Frankie Lopez or Cam Iwasa. Anyway, you had some points you want to get to. I'm done screaming about subs. You didn't make one. I can't believe that this team didn't get a sub there. I think that is something that Briggs is going to have to deal with, maybe in a long-term sense, thinking about that moment. And again, I'll say – to his credit, doesn't have a ton to work with. I don't think that he's got a stellar sub there. I think Werner was the obvious, super obvious move. So I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to trash Briggs. I'm just saying I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And that's just my opinion.
Thought just came to my mind, and this isn't a possibility for a sub, but it could have been a possibility for a sub if Ashapalin wasn't left off of the bench.
That's a really interesting point.
He's such a utility player. I'm not scared of him going into the midfield if we absolutely have to. And we've already learned that he can go anywhere on the, what is that, the left. So, I mean, there's your plan B in a way of like, hey, we can put this guy somewhere and he'll be good enough in a 15-minute scenario. I mean, can you imagine Ashapalin coming on the left wing in with 15 minutes left of extra time, you know, in minute 105, I guess.
God, that is such a great point. I love that point. You can even rework, because what's happening here is that you're getting pummeled. You've been playing defensively. You've been unbelievably lucky and skillful. It's been this ridiculous combination of skill and luck that has kept these 20 shots from Phoenix Rising, the best offensive team in the league, kept 20 shots out of the goal. An incredible blend of skill and luck that has made it happen. You have to start to cash in and be like, this is not sustainable. Eventually, one of these is going in by hook or by crook. We need to go to plan B. We need to actually try to get a goal, a golden goal in these last 15 minutes. I got 15 minutes left. You could have Apollon on the left. You could have Belmar on the right. You could bring Formella central. You could put a striker with him as well. You don't need three central defensive midfielders. Give me Formella at the 10 or whatever. Give me Frankie up top. Give me Apollon. Give me Belmar on the wings. You got to at some point understand your luck is going to run out. Your luck's going to run out.
Yeah, and that it did. The handball, I mean, we've said enough. Enough has been said. I'm going to glaze past it unless you have something big you want to say, because I think the real nail in the coffin of what we've been saying is what happens after the handball. So I'll let you say what you have to say, and then I want to get into that.
Yeah, final thoughts on the handball is it's part of the game. It sucks. It's an unfair part of the game. There are unfair parts of life. There are unfair parts of sport. Nothing is perfect. You have to try to prepare for the eventuality. You put yourself in this position where we've seen bad calls. We've seen mistakes from refs all year long. You're giving them 20 opportunities to get that mistake in their favor if you're giving them 20 shots. You only got 9 shots off. I understand you're playing a conservative approach. I understand you're a good defensive team, but it's at the end of the day, like if one team was going to get lucky and get a bad call or get a penalty called in the box, like it was going to be them because they had more opportunities for that. And that's a real thing that has happened pretty damn regularly throughout this entire season.
Fantastic point. No disagreements there. You know, moving on after the handball, after the goal, celebrations, lots of time to waste on Phoenix's side. And then Mark Briggs decides, now is the time I decide we need a goal, which I think it was like, this might be too strong a word, but that was pitiful. It is like, man, you're doing it. So you wanted to go to extra time, like go to PKs for real, for real. You didn't want to close this game off with 15 minutes left of extra time when you had those subs. Now we're chasing. Now you think we should go score goals. Why weren't we trying to do this with 15 minutes left in the game? When it was still technically anyone's game, when a lucky goal still could have won us the game and got us out of this round. Now we get a lucky goal. We still got to go to PKs and earn that. Like, to me, that was the worst move. Like, if we already talked about these subs not happening being Mark Briggs's worst move, I think making them after actually could be considered worse than that, just because of the look, the message it sends overall of being willing to just be second best and hope luck gets us to the next round.
I mean, the look is really bad, but I think it might have even been worse if he didn't sub anyone, because like at that point you're really in trouble if like, hey, did you not notice that a goal went in because you still have, you know, an exhausted striker and two exhausted wings that are just zero chance that they score. Zero. It's zero. You're it's zero. So, I mean, I actually think like it would be, I don't know. I think it would be worse if he didn't make that sub. But at the same time, you're right that when he made those subs, it was laughable. I hate to say that. It is really strong language that we're using. And again, I want to reiterate that I think Mark Briggs is a good coach, but this was just not his finest moment. And when I say laughable, I'm not saying that about, you know, him as a person or him as a coach, but in that moment when your team has just been scored on, to see, you know, your two strikers both take the field, it's like, how could you not laugh at how unfortunate that moment is? Like, oh my God, like it's over. Like there's no surer sign that it's over than to see the two striker subs walk on the field in like the 116th minute. It's like, no, like it's too late. It's too late. There's no, it was just confirmation in your heart as a Republic fan. You knew it was over when that goal went in. And then to see these two guys walk on the field, it's like, wow, it's really over. Like I've watched these guys play. I know they're not going to score a goal in 4 minutes. It's just not going to happen. And it was a really difficult moment, but yeah.
I mean, you see these guys come on 10 minutes prior to this. One of these guys come on 10 minutes prior to this. You get excited.
Yes.
Every time that Phoenix would cross one into the box or find a way to get past our midfield, it was like, oh no, oh no. And every time we found a way to get past their midfield or get the ball into their box, it was like, well, that's not going to work. I think you see these subs happen, or one of these subs happen 10 minutes prior. You get excited. You start thinking, hey, we're back. We're back. You know, get up out of your chair, do a little jig. Or at least I would have. But, yeah, no, after just like you said, it just goes, oh, yeah, the game's over. And, yes, you're obviously right that you have to make the subs at some point or you look real, like real ridiculous. So yes, I will put that out.
How funny, how awesome would it have been if he had like subbed in Hayden Sargis for the striker, like taking off a striker, taking off an attacker and brought in another defender.
It would have been pretty fun. That's what I was honestly thinking. Like when I was trying to figure out what I was going to say is like, I almost just want him to like, die on your sword at that point. Like,
yeah, just double down. You're already so deep in the hole. Go deeper.
You won't score another one. Like, I bet you can't score two. I don't know. But you know, I thought it summed up our season for the most part, as far as just not quite good enough.
It's really tough. I thought that Briggs played – I thought he managed a perfect game for 75 minutes, and I told you that. I think he started the perfect starting lineup. I think he employed the perfect – you know, the correct formation, the perfect tactic. It was a surprise to see how he went away from the press, you know, in the final third, even in a lot of the midfield. Like, he sat deep. He had his team sit deep and absorb pressure. That was pretty bold. This team didn't do that all year. This team was a high-pressing team. He changed what this team did, and it was the right call, and it was a smart call, and he used the right personnel for it. But at the end of the day, he just stuck to his guns a little too long. And up until that Skundrich sub, I thought this is the perfectly managed game. But I expected him to zig after that zag at some point. And I think that everyone was expecting that. You play this super conservative, super defensive game, and you get that result. You already got the result. 75 minutes of perfect defensive soccer. Now, cash in your chips and go for that golden goal. Bet on yourself. Bet on your players. I know that finishing has been the problem with this team all along, but you still need to score a goal to win a soccer game. That's still how it works.
I couldn't say better myself, man. Yeah, at the end of the day, it was a goal that separated us. And this goal may have gone in with a hand, but it counted, and we lost, and now we're going to reboot for next season. I am tapped out on as far as things to say, man. I think we did a really good job on this reunion episode that will unfortunately be a farewell of sorts. Do you have anything else to say before we kind of let the folks know what we're moving on to do?
It's great to have you back, Blake. I'm sorry that the situation couldn't be better, that you weren't coming back to a playoff win. I know the players want the same thing. I know that Mark Briggs wants the same thing. I think I still believe that this team has a lot of talent. I believe that this coach has a lot of talent. I think that I think Briggs needs to be given a little bit more to work with up front. I know we talked about this off mic. I know it's like that typical joke, right? But you need three more attacking players on this team. You need three more. Bring in three more strikers and wingers. But truly, that's what this team needs. And I don't know if they're going to get it in terms of spending, considering that COVID is happening and everyone is affected by that financially and otherwise. But I don't know that any teams are going to be spending a ton of money. I don't know if a lot of players are going to be wanting to uproot their lives and move across country when there's a pandemic going on. I don't know how this is all going to work out, but I definitely want to see another season from Briggs. I definitely want to see another season from us covering this team. That's about it for me, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that. I am very happy to be back myself. Circumstances will ebb and flow, but this podcast has been a rock of stability for myself to have something to look forward to, use my creative mind. It's been absolutely great working with you. We do want to do a like full season recap, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things, more of an overarching view. We tend to go game by game with this show, and we want to do a more big picture look at what happened under Briggs this season and what we think might happen in following seasons. Always looking forward to that MLS season and seasons that will come. And we also want to do some around the world soccer stuff. Rich, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we'll be back in some way or another, maybe not weekly, probably not weekly, maybe more like monthly in the real downtime of the off season. But, I know we put out some episodes on some international teams to support. Now it would be a great time to kind of reignite that, actually, with this season over and the Premier League getting into full swing, as well as a lot of other leagues around the world. I announced it on Twitter, didn't announce it on here, but I did choose my team that I'm going to be supporting internationally. And, it just so happens to be the rival of your team. That is actually, it was a big part of the draw for me, among many other things. But yeah, I've bought in. I'm a full on, I know it's early, so I can't, I can't compete with these people that have been, they're 90 years old and been cheering for Everton the whole time, but I am an Everton FC fan. I own a jersey thanks to Ace Ubis, who came on the show and has been chatting with me a lot of DMs about this team throughout the first seven games of the season. He bought me a James Rodriguez jersey, which is amazing. Thank you, Ace. Since I sent out the tweet, with the picture and everything, I committed to it. They're 7-0-0, Blake.
It had to happen eventually. I'm happy for you. I think you chose the right team. I know you put a lot of thought into it. Not so many years ago, I was given the task to give you a soccer team based off of a little bit of a personality test that I gave you. And I chose Everton way back then. And as you went on this journey on your own, watching a bunch of different teams, seeing what one grabbed onto your heart more, the stars aligned and sent you one of your favorite international players to Everton, to Merseyside, and I think that's what sealed the deal for you, if I'm remembering correctly. So it worked out perfectly.
It really did. You thought this should be the team for me. Our mutual friend thought that as well. Ace thought that. They grew on me. They grew on me. Big fan of Rog Bennett in the Men and Blazers podcast. I've been just eating through Everton podcasts. I subscribed to like 4 Everton podcasts, eating that up. And yeah, I spent some time in Colombia. Became a big fan of James Rodriguez during the 2016 World Cup. And yeah, so I mean, it was fate. So maybe we'll do an episode on the Merseyside Derby next week. A mini episode. Don't want to put too many Republic fans through a long ordeal about that, just because a lot of them probably aren't Liverpool fans or Everton fans. But yeah, you know, just to say that we'll come up with some content throughout the off season. We're also probably going to do some, yeah, like you mentioned, season overviews, roster overviews, looking at each position, each part of the field, perhaps. Maybe a little previews of where this team needs a little help going forward. But that's it from us for this Republic season.
Yeah, we will be serving you a casual dining for until the season starts, to have your four course meals of Rise of the Republic podcast returning when the USL season starts up again.
Yes, sir. Send us out of here.
Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through this season. It has been an honor. Peace.
And good night.